Hey friends, welcome to another episode of A Braver Brand, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kate K. McCarthy, and I am so excited this week to continue our four-part mission series with a conversation that I had with my friend Ashley Bowden. But before I share more about Ashley and what you can expect in this episode, because it is so good, y'all, I wanted to let you know that I just re-released my most popular free workbook ever, revamped for 2019. It is called Unedited. In it, I share my personal and ridiculously potent process, along with five powerful prompts, all designed to help you show up as the fullest, bravest, most unedited version of yourself online. Back by popular demand, I have had community members write back after completing Unedited, saying that those five little prompts and that powerful process helped reignite and realign their visibility and messaging, creating powerful ripples in their creative work. So, what I've done is I've dropped the link in the show notes, but you can also head straight to katekmccarthy.com/subscribe to snag your copy, and I cannot wait to hear what you create. All right, back to today's episode. Y'all, I am still chewing on the massive wisdom that Ashley dropped throughout this conversation. Ashley Bowden is best known for The Imperfect Boss, a movement that started with a hashtag campaign back in 2016 and has since taken off to include five more campaigns, courses, and how cool is this, an annual Imperfect Boss camp. In today's episode, which is part three of our mission series, Ashley shares all about how to turn your mission into a movement. She shares her five-part process, what makes a successful online movement, the pieces you just cannot miss, and how her incredibly successful campaigns have changed her life entirely. All right, enough from me. Here is Ashley. Hi, Ashley. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here for what is the second conversation around mission in our mission series. And you have just such an amazing mission and your work is so wonderful that I'm like so honored that you would take this time out of your day to be here with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love mission, so it's a good fit.
Yeah, I thought so. So I could go on and on and tell everybody about all the things about what you do and who you are, but I think it's probably better if it comes from you. So if you can tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and how you got into doing this work in the world.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was born on... 10 hours later.
Yeah, exactly.
How most people know me and kind of the work that I'm really focused on right now is I started and lead something called The Imperfect Boss. And The Imperfect Boss is really a movement where we're on a mission to make imperfect normal, really prove that imperfect is normal, and inspire women to grow their confidence. We started as an Instagram hashtag campaign that really took off in 2016 and have been doing it ever since, falling in love with the opportunity to really bring women together in vulnerability, connection, and confidence. And so that is what I do. I've been in full-time business since 2013. And it's looked very different over the years. But what really got me started in business and kind of, I would say, was ultimately what continued to lead me even here was in 2013, I started an online community and I fell in love with the magic of bringing women together and specifically mobilizing women around a message, which gives them the opportunity to not only have deep connections with one another, but also to impact the world through that message and kind of experiencing transformation themselves. And so that message has looked different over time, but I think ultimately, like, I just keep coming back to this idea of creating movements, you know, leading communities and really speaking to the potential and confidence in women And so that is a little of my story business-wise anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I think it's through the Imperfect Boss that I found you. And then, you know, people follow people and here we are. And I think one of the most remarkable things that I've been able to watch is I think that you and I talked about this a little bit before I hit record, but so much of what is powerful about having a strong mission is less about the individual offerings and more about the movement. Can you talk a little bit about, especially for the work that you're doing now with Imperfect Boss, and you had a camp a few months ago, like how remarkable is that? Like, what is the idea around the movement and like, how was that born? Like, how was Imperfect Boss born?
Yeah. Well, I think that every movement is born out of a message. Mm. You can't have a movement without a message. And if you try, it just won't work. So I think that's ultimately like has been my first step of really deciding, you know, what is this message and what is the message and how can I word this message in a way that it really truly resonates with people. And I think when you're creating a movement that you need to have a clear message, you need to have a message that resounds with people, you need to have a message that people are aching to hear. Mm. And it's so easy to mobilize people if you have a message that hits those three things. Yeah. Because the minute that someone hears that message, they're not going to say, oh, that's nice. They're going to say, how can I be a part of this?
Yeah. Well, and I think too that the difference between what you're talking about and like a lot of the more fear-based marketing, right, is you are inviting somebody to like show up and like claim a space, which is a totally different energy around like what you're creating this movement and the message around. I love that word too, like the ache.
Yeah.
Because it's less like this, you know, pain point, and it's more of like, how do we speak to what people are feeling and like bring them forward in a sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Yeah. So what do you feel like the, outside of a perfect boss, do you do work around message? You're speaking as somebody who knows a lot about this kind of stuff, especially, you've run a lot of different campaigns.
Yes.
Online, and you've gotten a lot of people around and included in these different like elements, like the different movements that you've led. Like, how, if somebody has a mission, I'm loving that you're talking about messaging around this, because I think that sometimes what happens is we think about it in like strategic messaging, and what you're talking about is kind of like, how do we gather a group of people around a singular message? How do you even start a campaign? I hope it's okay if we like dive into this. Like, how do you create a movement around a singular message? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I actually, I do work with people one-on-one to do hashtag campaigns, and it's something that I am hoping to run a course in 2019. But I basically have a system, a 5-part system.
I love it.
Of how to create a specifically successful hashtag campaign. But this system can truly be applied to any kind of online movement. When you're launching that baby, but it's so, I mean, what I said before. So the first step is message,
right?
Finding out what your message is. The second step is creating a concept. And so that is ultimately crafting an opportunity for your audience to experience your message by giving them one simple prompt. And the prompt has to be super simple. It's like the more simpler the prompt, the larger of an audience you can mobilize. The more complicated you make it, the less people are going to show up. They're going to be so much work.
Yeah.
Are you paying me?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Keep it simple and allow it to be actionable in that sense.
Yeah. And then you design that. Then the third step is rallying, which is one of the most important pieces. Mm. Because if you can't rally people, then you don't have a movement. You just have a message.
Mm.
And so rallying in the way I have done things. I really rally my existing audience and I really rally influencers. Mm. And I have worked with literally thousands of influencers over the last 2 years. And they help amplify the message.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really through the art of rallying that you can kind of create this viral effect of like, now you got like hundreds of people posting about it. And especially when you involve influencers, because those are the people that most people follow.
Right.
You're kind of, you know, someone just like scrolling and they're like seeing something like every four posts.
Mm-hmm.
And like wonder what's going on. Like, what is this thing?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is like, that's what you want to happen. That is the mark of a successful campaign.
Yeah. When people are wondering.
And then fourthly, you launch it. So rally people before you launch. That's really important.
Good call.
And then, which I see people do the opposite. Sometimes they're like, I'm going to launch this and then I'm going to rally people. Mm. But what often happens is because you've gone into it not prepared, then you're going to hear a lot of crickets most likely.
Mm.
And then the fifth step is to lead. So after a truly successful campaign, you will experience insane momentum.
Mm.
There will just be a huge energy to what you're doing if you do it well. And so you need to decide, like, how are you going to lead people forward from that place? And so those are kind of the five steps I use to launch the campaigns and make them successes.
So when you start with step number one with your message, do you already have an idea of where number five, leadership, is going? Does that make sense? Like, do you have an end goal in mind when you start a campaign or a movement in the way that you do?
Not always.
Okay.
And sometimes like it can be like, sometimes I do, and sometimes it can be very practical. And sometimes it's like, I, at the end of this, want to invite people into signing up for camp. Mm-hmm. Or I want to invite people into, I don't know, a Facebook group or something. But other times it's just more like, I want to rally people around the message and I just want to do it because of that alone.
Yeah.
The impact of the message, or the audience growth that can happen when you do that well.
Yeah. What has been for you the most, how many different campaigns have you run, first of all?
Six.
What has been the most challenging piece of it? I mean, I imagine that there's like a challenging piece to each one of those, but like overall, what have been some of the obstacles to being able to get that movement going, running, catching fire the way that it has?
Honestly, I just think the most challenging piece can be the amount of work.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of
tremendous amount of work. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so many moving pieces, to manage, because, and it's really, in some ways, it's really an art of managing people.
Mm.
And you know, the way that I have set up my campaigns, I've done it a few different ways, but some have been, had different types of teams of people. So it, you know, had like participants, influencers, and then an encourager role. And then I'm ultimately leading three teams of people through an experience. And that can just be, it can be a lot of work to manage people.
How do you keep it all? Okay, I have two questions. One, how do you keep it, like, practically speaking, straight? Do you like use a project management tool? Do you like to use sticky notes? Like, how do you keep it straight in your head?
Well, it's funny because I definitely run so much out of my head. So when I started thinking about, when I started telling people about like how I, or how to do it for themselves, I was like, I don't know. I don't know. Like,
how just do like, I do it? Yeah.
But I mostly rely at, up to this point, on Google Spreadsheets.
Mm. Awesome.
Yeah. Google Spreadsheet it.
And they're free. It's the best.
Yeah, it is.
And then the second question that I had is like, how do you, when you know that you are staring a campaign in the face,
yeah,
which is like, I imagine like this you know, all the moving parts and also like the beauty of the messaging. How do you care for yourself in the midst of something like that? Because if you burn out, everything falls apart.
Yeah, that's a good point. One thing that has surprised me about campaigns for me, and this is in some ways more specific to me because of the level of vulnerability that my message holds.
Yes.
It's so draining in terms of just like the energy it takes to hold a space for that many people at one time.
Yeah.
So the campaigns themselves, like, because by the time I get into the live days of the campaigns, like most of the work has already been done. Like I really am just kind of riding off all the work that I put in, but I am like, I'm still so tired just from creating that space and like just holding it really. And so that has been a surprising thing for me. And it took me a while to figure out, you know, at first I was like, why am I so tired? Like
I'm supposed to be liking this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that has been like a bit of a learning curve for me to figure out how to take care of myself in the process of that. But I think, it's a journey that I'm still on. But I think it's just about, one, making sure that all those moving pieces are taken care of going into those live days, and just showing up as I can and really not, you know, I think sometimes we see people get into like launch burnout or whatever and it kind of disrupts their entire life, but making sure that I'm holding close to rhythms of self-care and not neglecting those because I'm busy or because I'm doing a thing.
Right. They almost become more important in those moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. What has been the most life-giving piece of, I mean, in all the moving parts, in like having to take really good care of yourself and all of the learning curves that come with, like, honestly, I think self-care is like the longest learning journey ever. But
yeah,
what has been the most life-giving part of being a part of these movements?
I think it's two things. I think it's ultimately, it's worth it to me. The amount of work is forever always worth it to me when I get to experience the moment where I get to see all these women come together in a short period of time around a message that I created. Like, there's something so beautiful about it, and it can be a very moving experience. I remember when I did a campaign called The Truth Rebellion almost a year ago, actually. And the prompt was, the idea was that, you know, we all have lies that we struggle against. And for us, like, we know what our big one is, like what our big lie is. Mm-hmm. And I got people had to write that lie on their skin and then cross it out and write the truth somewhere on their body. And so people wrote it like anywhere, arms, stomach, legs. And to go through the hashtag and see that, like, it was such like it really created like a sort of a visceral response in me of, I think because it, you know, we all carry lies that we believe, but they're also invisible. And to see it on someone's body and to see that they've crossed it out and they've declared the truth instead. Yeah, it was like, it was super powerful. And so moments like that where you're like, you can just see it right in front of you. It's really beautiful. And then obviously the second piece of too is just like getting the opportunity to really make a difference, to disrupt what normally happens on social media, to see people be impacted by the experience of being vulnerable and being honest. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. I love that. I think, I would love to talk, if you are open to it, about what it is about. Cause it feels as though you're the core of your work, like no matter what the campaign is, the core of your work has, a really honed message. And I would love to talk about what that message is and why you think it is so powerful and why you think it resonates with so many people.
Yeah. So I think that the message, I see my message as a coin. And it, on one side, the message is imperfect is normal. On the other side, the message is, if imperfect is normal, you can be confident today.
Yeah.
It started, the way that the movement started, really started with that first message, imperfect is normal. And that message was really born out of, you know, this idea that we, you know, curate perfection and we're not really telling the full story. We're not telling the whole truth. And that because of that, we are, when we're going through something or when we feel imperfect or whatever, then we feel isolated, we feel alone, we feel like there must be something wrong with us, like, why can't we get it together, et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, it's like we're all experiencing the same things, but we're just not talking about it.
Yeah.
And so if imperfect is normal, then one, you're not alone. Then two, you're right where you need to be. Then three, you can talk about it and actually experience more connection than you would if you were pretending to be perfect. And four, the flip side of that being, you can practice confidence today. And I, and that was, you know, sort of also born out of this idea of like, so many people wait to be confident until they're perfect.
Yeah.
But if you wait to be confident until you're perfect, you'll be waiting your entire life.
Yeah.
And so, and, you know, it's interesting too, because we, I've been very intentional about setting a culture to the movement. And I, you know, it's like so many people can have the same, they could, everyone could have the same message, but the way that we communicate that or execute that could look so different. And, at the beginning, like, I was very intentional because I knew that this message of imperfect is normal could kind of veer another way. It could kind of veer the way of, like, I don't know, like, complaining and powerlessness and all that stuff.
Yeah. And
I just really had a sort of a revelation early on of, like, and I feel like I've been saying this like a record on repeat lately, but that imperfection,
it's when you know it's good that you need to repeat it over and over. Keep going. Sorry.
That imperfection is always an invitation to grow, that it's not an excuse to stay where you are. And if I had run the movement, I could have run the movement like imperfection is an excuse to stay where we are. Like, I'm imperfect, so this is my life now. Or whatever.
Right.
But I really wanted to propel people forward. And so that's kind of how that confidence piece sort of came in, that of course imperfection is normal and it's always going to show up in our lives. And it's an opportunity to really see ourselves. It's an opportunity to really connect with one another, but it also gives us a view and a look into the very places where we can grow and lead and explore and heal. And so that's kind of the flip side of the message.
I love that. I think I'm curious. I mean, other than the nitty gritty nuts and bolts, all the work that you have to do behind it, and kind of the strategy that goes behind running a successful campaign that gets a lot of people behind it, how has being a part of the process, like, have you seen the campaigns change your life as well?
Oh, yes. Good question.
I try to ask those.
Yeah, it's good. Okay, well, let's get real for a sec.
Yes, please.
So The Imperfect Boss, some of the inspiration personally behind The Imperfect Boss, that I felt like the epitome of The Imperfect Boss, because I was hardcore struggling with an addiction. And yeah, I was going on social media and I was seeing so much perfection and I didn't know how to, I couldn't reconcile any of it. And I felt so, I just felt so alone. And so I part, I remember because when I ran the first campaign, I was like, this is going to be my confession that I have an addiction and I'm going to talk about it. And so it really did come from some of my own, some of what I was going through, but it also came from this idea of like, I didn't want anyone to feel what I had felt.
Yeah.
And I wanted to bring some truth to that, to those conversations that probably are always happening in our heads. Mm-hmm. And so it's been interesting because then that was obviously a moving experience for me.
Yeah.
Seeing the effect that the messages had, seeing the movement really take form, seeing the message really resonate with people, and seeing that I was loved and accepted in my imperfection for myself. And so then it's been an interesting journey for me because I've been in recovery and I have been sober for 5.5 months. And it's just interesting, like how the movement continues to shape as I shape and as I form because of how it started and what I get to invite people into. It's like almost like at first, like, I got to invite people into this idea that they can share the imperfect pieces. Mm-hmm. But as I have now grown on from that, and now as I grow more into this idea of self-care and confidence and leadership, how then I get to now invite people into that. And so I think that is cool because I think it speaks to this thing too about, number one, obviously it's so important that you embody and live out your message.
Absolutely.
And number two, that the deeper you dive into your message, the deeper you dive into your wholeheartedness, the greater are the places and spaces that you get to invite these people into, that you get to invite your movement or your audience or community into. And so I think that's been a cool thing that's definitely happened for me over the last several months.
Yeah, it's almost like you get to carve out, like as you walk the path as well, you get to kind of like play that leadership role where you maybe are just a couple of steps ahead, carving out this path of wholeheartedness and vulnerability and confidence for your people. And I think that that's, a part of our work, right? Like if you're coming at your work from this like heart-driven space, there's never going to be something that you offer that doesn't change you as well. And then you are able to offer with that like greater self-awareness, self-knowledge, self-forgiveness, self-compassion, and connectedness, able to offer something with like even greater depth and even more wisdom and continue to like make that an offering. Like it's never just a one and done situation.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. What does confidence mean to you? Like, I feel like that's such a key part of your message and your work. And it sounds like your journey as well. Like, I don't know if we ever like take a moment to define what that means. Like, what does confidence mean to you?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I think for me, confidence means operating out of my fullness, not my lack. Mm. And so,
damn, that's good.
Yeah. I feel like that's it. That's it for me.
Yeah. I think that's beautiful. How has your, if this is too personal, feel free to just tell me off. How has your recovery and journey of sobriety like impacted your relationship with confidence? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Mm. Yeah, it's like totally changed the game. Mm. It's actually funny because I think that I'm naturally a leader. Like it's just kind of what happens, but, and I can tell my confidence in growing because I was in a couple of situations recently where it's like the leader in me was like trying to like really take over, you know?
Yeah.
So I was in therapy. It was really funny, actually. I was in therapy, full places, for my leader to shine. And we were talking about something. We were talking about, like, my four main needs.
Mm.
And I was like, you should give me homework. And this is what the homework should be. And she's like, okay.
Right.
I was like, great, I'll do it. And so it's been interesting to see, like, how recovery brings out my confidence, how it brings out this leader in me without me even having to try and force it. Like, it's just, like, naturally pouring out of me. And I think one of the biggest things, not great things, that addiction gave me was not only a deep sense of insecurity, but also a deep sense of disconnection.
Yeah.
And primarily, or what was probably the most damaging out of anything, was a disconnection with myself and a disconnection with the present. And so as I've been in recovery and been able to be like, I actually feel connected to my body. I actually feel connected to today. I actually feel connected to what's going on inside of me, allows me to show up with so much more confidence. 'Cause it's like, I'm coming out of this place of, like, deep care, deep nurture, and deep presence.
Wow. Like, I'm just like, I have chills. That can't even, I mean, I don't know that we talk about this very often in business. I try to talk about it as much as physically possible on this podcast, but the ways that self-awareness and self-growth impact our business trajectory.
Yeah.
Now that you're here 5.5 months sober.
Yes.
That's the term, right? Sober.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense for where this work, this mission, this movement is headed now that you're continuing to heal and feel more connected to yourself?
It's interesting. I don't think it'll, you know, like, change that much. Mm-hmm. I think obviously the message stays the same. So
right.
Part of what anchors me.
It's a good word.
But it's funny because, and these haven't even changed that much, but just so it's like a subtle change. And then, so when I've been thinking about it because of camp stuff. So when I ran the first camp, I had kind of decided that our four main topics were vulnerability, confidence, creativity, and play.
Mm.
And I've been thinking about them for my future, and they're almost exactly the same, except they're vulnerability, confidence, creativity, and leadership.
Yes.
And so I feel like probably the most change, and it's pretty subtle even at what it is, but to more focus on, instead of just focusing on, like, business or play, even to focus on how to be a leader and how to be bold with your leadership in the world, coming at it from that place of vulnerability and of confidence and of self-connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's transformative. And I also think that, like, I always, like, try to make values work a part of whatever work that I'm doing, right? Because I think that coming back to our core values is so important. And it sounds like, you know, we can only have so many top core values. Like,
right.
There's only so many ways to splice yourself. And having those for this vision of vulnerability, confidence, creativity, and leadership, like, having those four as the heads, mm-hmm. plays into each of those things. Our businesses play into all of those things, but having those as, like, the driving forces of, like, how are we going to show up? How are we going to create transformation? Because I think that at heart, most of the people, if not all, who are listening to this podcast, like, their driving force in their work in the world is to create meaningful change.
Yeah.
And you can't do it without those four things.
Yeah, 100%.
I just love that clarity. And also, you get to have fun while you do it. So nobody's saying that play has to be off the table.
Yeah. Which is an interesting thing to talk about because those are my themes, but then I also have culture and fun is part of the culture. So
right.
Culture and themes, they kind of play off one another.
Do you think that kind of switching gears back to what we were talking about at the beginning about like for people who want to be able to create movements, whether it's a hashtag campaign or it's a retreat or it's whatever kind of movement they want to rally their people around, small mm-hmm. or large, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds like for your work that having that lens of the culture that you created really set your work apart. How do you think that, I don't even know how to phrase this question. when somebody is creating their messaging, right? Like I think that we often think like, okay, well, people are already talking about this out there. But I feel like that idea of culture shifts it so that it's yours. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah.
What was the process of figuring out what you wanted your culture to be? And do you have any thoughts on it in general?
Yeah. So my process was honestly not that intensive.
I love it.
It was, I want this to be about?
Yeah.
And really, because I really, you know, started thinking about why I love thinking about culture is I love thinking about it in the way of how can I craft a culture that creates an experience for people where they get to be transformed even if they don't meet me?
Mm.
And if you can create that in a culture, you don't even, like, it doesn't even need you.
Right.
Because it's so entrenched in the culture of what you've created. And so it's funny because I gave this spiel at camp so many times, but I always think about it in terms of like going into a different culture, like in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, for example, like let's say I go somewhere and they like always eat meals together.
Mm-hmm.
And no one came up to me and said, you have to eat these meals together. And it'll change your life if you do. That's just a part of the culture that is what happens. That's what's priority. That's what's valued. And in the experience of having that, I become impacted by that.
And nobody even has to say, this is what we do here.
Yeah. And no one even has to say, you know, kind of speak the message like, oh, if you take time to slow down, your life will be impacted.
Right.
But I get the message. I receive the message through experiencing the culture.
Dang.
Oh. So how can I create something where people can receive a message by experiencing my culture that I built?
I love that. I think it reframes the way that you build out and create an experience for somebody, because I think that like whatever it is that we offer, whether it's a product or a service or whatever, like the experience itself is part of it. And to create whatever culture, to kind of create a intentional culture so that whatever it is that they experience, like, you know, whether you were to say like, hey, this is important to me or not, they already know that this is important to you.
Yeah. And then what I also love about that is when you're very intentional about setting culture is that it immediately creates boundaries around what's important and what's not okay.
Yeah.
And you don't even it's actually a beautiful thing because you don't even necessarily need to speak to it of like, don't do that here.
right. We don't do that.
You just know, like, this is not a place for me to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to need to chew on this a little bit. It's so good because I think that we hold everything with such a tight grasp, right? Because so many of us are a little bit control freaks. That's why we do everything by ourselves, right? Like that's why we have these creative businesses where we started this thing. And to make something so intentional that we can release control and it still happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think that that's what we want, right? Is to be able to create something that is self-sustaining and continues the ripple effects beyond our one-on-one interactions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's even an interesting thing to think about, especially like, let's say you're getting to the point of building a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier to trust a team if you've built a culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because then it just permeates every single decision.
Yeah.
From that point. Oh my gosh. I love that.
You're having a moment.
Like I'm literally sitting here like, this is going to change everything.
I love it.
It's so good because I think that that's where leadership happens, is in setting that rhythm, which is the culture of like, this is what we believe in. And just by virtue of what we believe in, that we already know that this stuff is okay. And this is what's not okay. And this is how we show up. And this is how we connect. And it makes so much of what we concern ourselves with, I don't want to say obsolete, but like it flows and is in alignment just by virtue of having that really intentional culture created.
Yeah.
And allows us to make a tremendous amount of impact without all the blood, sweat, and tears.
Mm-hmm.
Although there will be tears.
Totally. I think too, like if you really want to grow something and you really want to grow it to be bigger than you, that you can't do that without culture. Because for example, like just really practically, mm-hmm. if I, for example, when I ran the camp, there were 85 people there. And if I didn't put any thought into the culture, it's almost like it could create a situation where it's like the closer you were to me, the more impacted you got.
Right.
But not 85 people can be close to me. And so it kind of puts all this. And honestly, I think some leaders in the online world do take more of that approach of like, I am the epitome of the transformation.
So right. They thrive on it a little bit.
The closer you get to me, because, you know, sometimes the more money you can make or whatever. But I think that if you're really going to create something that's so much more bigger than you,
you are
limiting yourself and you're limiting the vision if you make the transformation end with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what culture does. It takes that magic that you have inside of you, permeates it in a culture so that when people walk into the atmosphere, they can be transformed by it.
Damn, that's good. Yes, I love that. And then I think too that it allows us to step back and let magic happen and like be able to watch what we've created, and so that it doesn't, like you said, like if 85 people got a little piece of you at camp,
yeah,
you would have no pieces of yourself.
Right.
So like the bigger the impact, the more that we have to be able to create that intentional culture. And it's so much easier at the beginning than like having to catch up. I mean, you think about larger corporations. I remember listening to an episode of How I Built This with Guy Raz, and he was talking with the guy who founded Patagonia, and they have like an incredible culture at Patagonia. And people would ask him all the time, like, how did you do this? How do I do this for my culture, my company? And they're like, he's like, if you didn't do it at the beginning, you're never going to be able to like impose a culture. You have to create it kind of from the ground up and be really thoughtful about it. And we're all at a place where we're able to do that now.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. Thank you for this. This is such, I'm like honestly like buzzing with ideas right now.
I love it.
And I'm so grateful for your wisdom and your experience and the fact that you were able to watch your culture play out at camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard stories about camp, and camp sounded like it was just the most magical place on earth. What a wonderful thing to watch emerge from all of your hard work and like heart work as well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so totally. Cool.
So as you know, at the end of every episode, I ask my guests two questions. The first of which is, who or what makes you feel your bravest?
Yeah. Well, you know what? What makes me feel the bravest, what makes me feel like I can do anything, is simply falling in love with the vision I've been given, and then fear no longer has a voice. At least not one I'm listening to.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, right? That's beautiful. Oh my goodness. And now that they've gotten just like a snippet of the wisdom, where can they find you on the internet? How can they learn more about you or work with you?
Well, you can find me at theimperfectboss.com or ashleybowden.com, and then mostly on Instagram at ashley.bowden or imperfectbosses.
Perfect. All of that, as you can imagine, will be linked in the show notes. And so make sure that you head there to get all of the good stuff. Again, thank you so much for being here. This episode is coming out on January 15th, and 5 days ago was Ashley's birthday. So make sure that you head to the places and you wish her a very happy belated birthday. So grateful for your wisdom, and welcome to your 30s.
Thank you very much.
The best. You're so great. Thank you so much for listening to A Braver Brand. To find more resources, show notes, and exclusives, head to www.katekmccarthy.com. If you loved this episode, make sure that you subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And while you're at it, leave a rating and review. Our work relies on listeners like you, and we're grateful each and every time you spread the word. Whether this is your first episode or you've listened to us since day one, you know that I am all about Instagram. Come find me at Kate K. McCarthy and then reach out and say hi. I adore you already. Thank you to everyone who makes this podcast possible. A Braver Brand is produced by me and my slam bang behind the scenes team. Catch you next time.